Hey there, Sean.
Hey, Pierce, how's it going?
It's pretty okay.
All right, that means it's time for another episode of the It's Pretty Okay podcast. Let's do it.
Let's start the show. We're born, we cry, we breathe, we die, we say
goodbye, the moon, the sky, no, you're not. All right, we're all here together this week, and we're kind of shooting the shit before we started recording, trying to figure out what it made sense to pod about. And we've already reached the stage, you know, where we're looking back with nostalgia on our trip to Los Angeles that happened 3 weeks ago. And Kevin, you sort of you're enthralled by one part of that trip in particular.
Yeah, we had an awesome Airbnb. Went to this fun place called the Surly Goat. Watched some basketball. Hasn't been the greatest tournament in terms of margin of victory, but there'll be times where I just sit there for like a minute or two and just think about sugarfish. And yeah, it's just kind of captures my mind, and I want to go back. And right? Yeah, I don't really know what to do with it.
So, to give some context for those listening, Sugarfish is a sushi restaurant that is Los Angeles based. And has a number of locations. I know that they have a number in Los Angeles. They have at least one location in Corona Del Mar in Orange County. They probably have more in other places.
There's at least one in New York.
There is at least one in New York, but it is you walk in, you know, pretty quick, as sushi often is. You can get a set menu of sushi options that's kind of coursed out. And they have, you know, pretty standard, you know, sashimi courses and sushi courses. And they'll have, you know, something special. They've got some, you know, cod here or the nigiri there, stuff like that.
But it is a proper, it's not, I think we will get into this a fair amount more. It is very much not like what you might think of.
You're not getting sushi rolls.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. It's not, you know, street level sushi restaurant that you would think of first.
Yeah. Which is kind of where a lot of my pleasant surprise came in, is my impression of sushi was just sushi rolls.
Yeah.
And I figured I'd only had, you know, crappy sushi rolls, for lack of a better term, before, and they're fine, but I was like, okay, well, like, if I go to a nice restaurant, this will just be like this, but it will taste a bit better. Like, I still don't get the big deal.
So it is elevated, but in a very approachable way. You feel like you are having a quote-unquote fancy sushi experience, but you're not really breaking the bank to do it, which is really cool, because I think, Kevin, the thing that you are responding to most of all is the quality is excellent. Like, it is, you know, I feel like I'm excluding myself for reasons we don't have to get into, but like, most people in like most places are not going to get fish of anywhere near that quality at all. And it's really no fault through it. Max, it's unfair. I did not disclose anything, but it's important that it's a really special experience for you, Kevin. And some of that is the approach. And a lot of that is the quality, which is a thing that it's no fault of Harrisonburg's, that they just don't have fish of that quality. It's understandable.
Yeah, and like, even just things like the seaweed. Like, I've always been fine with seaweed, but like, I don't know, I can take it or leave it. But then the seaweed rolls, when they bring it out to you, that's also elevated. And mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I guess I'm kind of worried that, even if I go to a city in Washington DC or something and try to get elevated sushi, like it's either going to be not as good or just like won't be able to capture that moment or the surprise of that meal.
Or you will just pay an arm and a leg for it.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. I think it's there. Mm-hmm. You know, like Nobu exists. But you're not walking out of Nobu for $40 like you can walk out of Sugarfish for $40.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what we want to talk about is, you know, Kevin's experience potentially ruining him. But mm-hmm. I think that there, to spend a little bit more on this, it's like, it is a really cool thing that they figured out this is going to be a pretty quick meal. We can scale and demand this quality and keep it at a manageable price because we have a number of locations, because we're seating a lot of people. And it just kind of this... Kevin, you're right. Like from a quality perspective, it is excellent. And then also it's a tremendous value. Like good luck finding something that's a better value. So like that's super, super laudable. But I think what's important here, and Max, you have a different sushi journey, which I think is fun. Is like, what do you do once you have this like really top tier experience in anything, but I think especially food and drink, it's like, all right, I guess that's it. I guess I'm never having sushi again.
Yeah, I don't know who you're asking, but I mean, yeah. I know for me, when I have other things, like I try to, I usually go to like, okay, now I'm just going to try to like make it as close to that as I can at home. Like I want to mm-hmm. recreate that food, but sushi is at least one of the few or many things that for a variety of reasons I have no intention or desire to do at home. There's so many reasons, honestly. One of them is just like getting fish of that quality is already, to your point, like at a price point, hard to do. I don't know. What do you do in that situation?
I think for me, and I've found it hard, even though we discussed it, to think of food experiences like this. I mean, experiences is maybe better than like the specific food I ate. I've been fortunate to eat at some really phenomenal restaurants. And there's like a tier of restaurant that I hadn't gotten close to at all. And then all of a sudden I had a few of those in like the course of a couple weeks. And that's in some ways ruined me since then. But I think there's an educational way to it, which I have tried to glean from that, which is once you've had that good experience, it does make you more aware of like, oh, well, overall, this may not have been the greatest thing ever, but I really appreciated that because it reminds me of this. You've got these reference points. And so, you know, Kevin, you may not have sushi like that in for a very long time, and you may never have sushi of that, you know, value again, but mm-hmm. you're going to go places now and you're going to have seaweed and you're gonna be like, wow, that was damn good seaweed. Like I'm really impressed with that. And so I think maybe you're like, oh, this ruins me. I'm just not going to have sushi again. Or like, I'm going to avoid it mm-hmm. for a very long time. Cause why? But at the same time, I think you still need to use those reference points of a high point.
I think that what part of the concern is just that the part of the experience for me is also just the surprise of how much I liked it. Like if I go to a really nice restaurant, I'm kind of expecting going in, oh, this is going to be really tasty. Whereas this, I was like, well, I like basically everything. So like, I'm going to like the food, but it's going to be, you know, that's all it's going to be. I'm going to like it. And then, so like now there's not going to be that surprise element. When I get it. So even if it was like the same meal, it won't be the same meal.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point is I'm going to use the term influencers here just because I can't think of another way. But the way a lot of people learn about new restaurants or experiences now, someone else went and did it and they captured all of it. And they capture it in a way that is not just written. It is they talk about it. you might hear how crunchy, crispy the fried chicken is. You're something like that. You get this full experience like you're there, which is really cool. But at the same time, you know, Kevin, you didn't have expectations necessarily. You went in kind of blind. It's the difference between seeing The Usual Suspects and knowing nothing about the movie at all versus like being aware that, oh, there's a twist, or knowing what the end of the twist is or something else. And I think for me, that's one thing I think about a lot with experiences, more with concerts in some ways, and movies. But you can never like replicate the perfect moment in the perfect context that maybe you had, you know, the first time. I think of a friend of mine, my first year of school, took me to the Phish concert at JPJ at UVA. And that was just totally blew my mind because I didn't know what to expect at all. I can never replicate that again. And so it's like I can go, but I'm chasing a ghost.
So the thing that comes to mind for me then is like that's true enough. But then you've now opened up excuse me, a potential new door of, you know, enjoyment and fulfillment for yourself in the form of, now that you have experienced it, you have the capability to introduce someone else to that experience for their first time too. And that's, I don't know, that's really satisfying. I also went in, like, I had heard the name Sugarfish before, but, you know, I thought it was just like a real bougie sushi roll place. So like it kind of blew my tits off as well. I was not expecting what we got, and it was incredible. And now, like, maybe I don't get, you know, I'll never get the experience of my first time at Sugarfish anymore. But like, I know that if I have, you know, if I'm in a place that has a Sugarfish with people that I care about that enjoy sushi or that think they might be sushi curious, I can go, hey, check this out. And it's its own, you know, it's different, but it's its own form of, you know, of satisfaction.
I honestly, of the experiences we had there, that also make me think of it, because I know some of you had not had a Korean barbecue experience before, and I had, so I knew what to expect. You know, if that was your first Korean barbecue experience, it would be hard to top for a number of reasons. But I think that especially, that's one where I think, oh, This would really kind of change the way I approach like what it is to go to a restaurant and to have food. It's like there is a grill in front of me and it's going to be hot for a long time and there's going to be things flying about. And it's different than like, you know, if you go to a hibachi place, which I guess you could compare, but that is more performative in a way. And it's like, no, this is your meal and it is just you all and it's you and the fire. And maybe there's a person helping you or you learn. And then maybe that improves over time. But that is a thing where the first time you do it, that's one that struck me because I saw you all. I mean, you all have had sushi and you've had fish before. But like because the preparation of the food and the way it is doled out is so different from Korean barbecue, I would think that was one that's like, wow, that really changed me. And I want to make sure I bring other people to it down the line. Like I didn't realize you all didn't necessarily know how it worked. And I'm glad that I didn't really explain it to you. Cause I think it's more fun to, again, go in blind. Like I can't be someone who at that time and place goes and sees Jaws as it came out when it was first released or Star Wars. I'm sure that was incredible, but like, it's still, Sean, to your point, really enjoyable secondhand to bring somebody a good experience.
All right. This is going to sound dumb, but I think I had like a reasonable idea of what the Korean barbecue experience is going to be like. The part that I didn't know was that I was not necessarily expecting the staff to be doing the cooking of the meat for you, mm-hmm. because I have had on several occasions now the most analogous thing we have in, like, quote unquote, more standard restaurant going to, it's not standard at all. I've been to the Melting Pot a bunch because Emily likes going there. And yeah. It's like the process is all, it is the same. It is, you are handed your meat and your sides and things, and you're sitting at a table that has a cooktop in it. It's different because you're doing it in liquid, like it's a hot pot. Although you mm-hmm. can get them to set it up as a grill. That is a thing that is available to you. But the main difference is that you are responsible for doing your own cooking.
Yeah.
This experience did not spoil my trip to Park's Barbecue in any way. I promise.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like an active fire, and I know that there's a little fire at Melting Pot, but it's different when it's like this fire is made specifically to char meats. Like that is a different type of thing.
They have a big cart of just like all the meat on it too. Like right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not pretty. Like that's the thing is a fondue pot is kind of pretty, and you know, a slab of stainless steel with you know, seating all around it that you have at a hibachi, like it is still fairly utilitarian, but it's kind of pretty. Korean barbecue is not pretty, not at all. Like most places inside, they have the big hoods over top, so like there will be smoke, there might be blood, but like, so I really appreciate that, and you still have a you know, a tremendous time. You get your like big huge Korean beer, and it's a good thing. But I mean, to come back to the point, like you're like, there are places around me where I can go and have that experience, but it's probably not going to be as good, or maybe it would be similar, but it's not going to be as good. And like, it's the first time aspect, even if it's not my first time, it might be someone you're with first time. And I think that that's, at some point you hit critical mass of the new people you can bring to make it a little dark. And so that chaining of experience, which I think makes a big deal, then you really are ruined, I think.
Yeah, well, Pierce, you mentioned Max has like a bit of a sushi ghost that he's also chasing. So I'm curious about that.
Max, I feel like you're not actually chasing a ghost. You're actually chasing improvement.
Yeah, well, so we were talking about like you said, if you've had, you've never had an experience of a certain kind, and then you have it, if it's really good, it can be hard to match. I mentioned something that's kind of the opposite, but also sushi, which is that I had never had sushi growing up, as far as I can remember. And so the first time I had sushi, at least that I can remember, was from the gym at UVA, like the AFC branded sushi that they sell at, you know, chain non-high quality grocery stores and the likes. Basically, like some of the cheapest effectively sushi you can get. And I loved it. I was like, this stuff is great. And I think that kind of set my expectations and my baseline, not my expectation, but my baseline is so low that it's almost like ever since then, every time I have sushi, that's what I'm comparing it to. And so I just kind of end up liking to a certain degree all sushi. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like if anyone else, like if they started with like reasonably good sushi, then they'd probably be like, no, grocery store sushi's, you know, I don't know if they'd say it's inedible. Maybe they wouldn't, but I would understand if someone said that. I don't know.
You've kind of pizzaed your sushi, like the thing about, oh, well, all pizza is good. And it's like, so even if you have something really good, it's not going to take away from your ability to still go, I'm in the sushi mood. Like I'll go get it from Kroger, which Kroger is the largest seller of sushi in the United States. Because, you know, sometimes people just want sushi and they want, lunch in a little box or whatever, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's still gonna, and it's also still gonna like scratch that itch of that first time enjoyment you had with it.
Exactly. And I think that that's a great way to approach things. You can still go, wow, the nori was excellent there, or I like the way that they do the rice here and stuff like that. You can still pick up the little things, and your comparison is one of improvement or relative goodness, as opposed to how close to the mountaintop does it come. I mean, comparison is really a devil, and it is hard to pause that. And that's something that we should write down, because Sean, I know that there's a Bomani thought about LeBron and Michael Jordan and in comparison that we'll have to get to at a later date.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's the thing that I try to do is I try to be thoughtful in comparison and really use it to build. And it sounds like that's what you've done, Max.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that I have like a similar thing with Chinese food. Is like when I want Chinese food, really what I want is like the mall food court, Panda Express or whatever Chinese food with like pick three entrees and I don't know that I've had super elevated Chinese food. PF Chang's is probably the fanciest Chinese food I've had, but that's what I want with Chinese food.
Well, that's where like pizza has done the right thing. Is there's like your delivery style pizza, there's a New York style pizza, there's Chicago style, there's Neapolitan, there's the mellow mushroom type of pizza, which I feel like it's its own strata. And it's like, I have different moods, and like they can be compared on this level, or they're really totally different products. Not dissimilar from, do I want coffee because I need a caffeine vehicle, or do I really want to have like a fancy beverage?
Do I want a burrito or do I want Chipotle? They're different
things. Do I want a burrito or do I want... Yeah, and that's fine. It's just, it feels like with sushi, we maybe haven't broken it out in that way, but maybe that's just because most people have had AFC sushi, and that's fine. That's a thing, but they're very different products than, you know, what we had at Sugarfish. Yeah.
I think people break it out, but I think to your point, if you go to a nice sushi restaurant, there's always different things you can look to try. Like, I don't know, a few years ago, I went to one in San Diego, and, you know, I think if you're paying a certain premium above that, you expect the fish quality to be a certain level, but then they were also doing some really fun creative rolls, and that was where I really latched on to the one with, like, a candied lemon and yuzu and some other things going on, and it was like, okay, this is more on the creative side, but I was like, would I recommend this place? Like, yeah, but it's not for the same reasons as Sugarfish. It's more, you know, on the creativity side.
Now, I'd be interested, and this doesn't have to be food or drink necessarily, it could be anything, but have you had experiences in life where you've gone, you know, that really was the best. I don't think I'm ever going to do it again. Like, that's fine. I'm retired from that act or that dish or whatever it may be.
Oh man,
sushi Sugarfish could be mine. I don't know. We'll see. I have a long life. Yeah,
it's like you are content with that being the end. Like, you're not going to chase the ghost. You're not going to chase something better.
I'll probably try it again. I don't think I can think of anything else.
Yeah, I don't know that I have something for you there.
I can't think of anything where my take is like, I've had this thing once and it was so good that I will never be able to, you know. I haven't tried heroin. But that's basically what you're asking us is, have we determined that there's anything in our life that we feel that, you know, operates the same way that heroin operates?
I think... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, the one thing that comes close, I think, is being with an artist. If I like listen to an album that I really like, and like it's just kind of an out of nowhere, I never really heard of the band before, I like the album. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I thought the band's other albums are that good, so I'm just going to listen to this album.
Glad you said that, because I just realized that my answer is, I do not and will not acknowledge any Green Day music that was released after 2004.
That's fine.
Because it's all bad.
Yeah, well, it's not.
But you've heard it to determine it's bad.
But that's the.
I heard enough of it until I heard enough of it until maybe like 2012 to determine that I was done with new stuff and was not ever going to seek it out again.
Yeah, so I.
But American Idiot really, still whips.
Yeah, I really. There are some. I'm trying to think of good examples. I really want. I have a good concert one, which I'll get to, but there's another example that has jumped to mind. I know you all are familiar with the beer Hop Slam, which is by Bell's, and it's like a 10% double IPA, maybe a triple IPA with honey. It's very hoppy, very bitter, and it used to be a very big thing to have it. And Westover Beer Garden in Arlington would have a keg every year. They'd have one, and they'd announce it, and then people would go, and they would drink it. I went once, and the keg is tapped in about 30 minutes. And this is a 10% IPA. It is a ridiculous beer to drink. That is something where, like, I'm probably never going to get that on tap before. One, because it's irresponsible, and two, because that experience, the wholeness of it, was special, and, like, with scale, it's kind of ruined now because you can just get it. Same thing with, like, waiting in line to get GBS to come back to that in the snow, which is a thing that did we all do together, which we definitely did at Charlottesville. We waited in the snow for it. A thing that now, because of scale, is not as interesting. Yeah, you can get it at Costco. And what I was going to say from a concert perspective is I did not do this, but thinking back, I would have been okay doing it. Max, we went to the Future Island show in Baltimore at the very small venue, right? I'm not making that up, am I?
Yes, at Autobar.
Yeah, at Autobar. So we saw Future Islands in a place that was probably large enough to hold like 100, 150 people, very small, maybe 200. If I had never gone to a Future Island show after that, that would have been fine. Like, they cannot put on a better show than that, given context, given how into it everybody was, given the circumstances. And so maybe that's not saying, oh, I should have quit after these, but I think it is okay to recognize, like, it is never going to be better than that. And I've done that a few times, and I'm content with myself there.
I guess my answers would be, they're kind of more cop-outs, but if it would be seeing aging artists. I'm thinking about the time I saw Bob Dylan, or more recently, Willie Nelson. And I'm like, I wanted to see them live. I saw them live. They're not getting any better.
Yeah.
And so, like, I certainly wouldn't go out of my way to see either of them live again.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's not really the same, because it's like, objectively, the quality is getting worse as they get older. But,
You also may not be able to. There's going to continue to be sushi. At some point,
Willie Nelson's, 93? Yeah.
I mean, he might be eternal. Who knows?
Yeah. Marijuana does that, I heard.
Well, and probably early in the days, it probably had a lot of formaldehyde in it, so he may just continue on forever.
He's just pickled.
Yes. Pickled.
All right. I know we got to kind of keep things moving, so maybe let's wrap it up there and move on. Max, you maybe have an out, so should we do trivia first?
I can stay.
Okay, well then let's get an apology, because it's time for Pierce.
I want to hear the apology. Yeah.
So, if you're ever doing yard projects and you look and you go, oh, I need to order some soil, like, you know, a topsoil compost to put into some beds, which is the thing I'm doing. You're going to be met with, measurements, cubed measurements, and you're going to figure out that you need a lot of soil, and that's fine. If you get 2 cubic yards of soil, and I want you to imagine a box that's 3 by 3 by 3 of soil, and you go, okay, yeah, I'll move that. I have a little bit of time during the workday, and I'll do a little bit in the evening. So I am very glad that I moved 2 cubic yards of soil over the last 2 days. I think it took me 6 hours. Maybe it was more like 4, but it felt like 6. If you're ever going to do this, if you've not done it before, don't get the bags delivered at the bottom of your driveway if you need to go anywhere. because it's going to take you much longer than you realized to move them. Fortunately, I didn't really have to go anywhere, but I knew that I knew about an hour in, I was like, well, I can't move my car until I get this shit done. So very happy, really enjoyed the task, but yeah, it takes a long time. It takes a very long time to move 2 cubic yards of soil.
Well, it sounds like it might have worked out because then it got you to do it quicker. Maybe put it off otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. Check with me tomorrow on how sore I am.
Wait, was that a self-apology? Or did you block someone?
No, it impacted my whole household. Okay. Like, I couldn't move my car and the other car could not come into the driveway.
No, that's fair. We used to get half cords of wood delivered and they would drop them in the driveway. And it's like, we're stacking wood for 4 hours because no one's going anywhere until we're done.
Stack that wood.
All right. Thank you for that. We'll do a quick big idea from pop culture. And the context for this is that I am a bit of by the standards of my household, I am the night owl. And so I will routinely wind up taking a shower for the day at midnight when I am the only one still awake. And I have developed a bad habit from time, not all the time, but from time to time of if it was not a strenuous day, I will keep, I'll have headphones in because the AirPods are water resistant. And I have been on this run. We talked about this a few weeks ago, of trying to trim stuff out of my digital life. And part of what I've been doing is going through all these podcasts that I have big backlogs of episodes downloaded and be like, how much of this do I really need to keep? So I want to say subscribe to this podcast. And I listened to an episode of the show Song Exploder, which is about musicians breaking their songs into component parts, and they bring the Pro Tools stems and play you little individual tracks and talk about the writing and recording process of how it all comes together. And I listened to the one for the King Princess song Let Us Die, which is one of my favorite songs of the last couple of years. And I had this epiphany moment where they're talking about, their father is famous in the industry recording engineer, but they haven't always had a good relationship with him, and they've been sort of mending that. And they were talking about, for the first time ever, actually going to their dad for recording advice on how to make how to make a chorus really pop. And I had to restrain myself from yelping in the shower at 12:30 a.m. the other night when I learned that the drums on that song were played by Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters, and B, that one of the most surefire ways to really set off a chorus and make it huge is to make the verses mono and the chorus stereo. And I ran my way through the rest of my shower to get out and dry off and put on over ear headphones and listen to the song, because they play the song in full at the end of the podcast. And I sat there in bed, no one awake but me, and I'm like, holy shit, my whole world has been opened up again. And so I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that experience. And if you like music and are a bit of a dork, there's probably at least one episode of Song Exploder that will tickle your fancy too.
Well, you ruined that one for us by giving us ruining the context, as we just discussed. But that is really cool. That is,
if you want a different,
yeah.
We're on a different Song Exploder episode. I think there's one on Alaska by Maggie Rogers, and it's a really fun story. That includes some surprises too. So I'll leave it at that.
Does she tell the class story?
Yeah.
Yes. Once you have watched that, I'll send you a YouTube link of the video, the relevant video.
Oh yeah, that's worth it too.
All right. And rather than continue to make oblique inside joke references to a podcast that Max and I have listened to and y'all haven't, Kevin, what is this week's Jeopardy question?
Yeah, so pretty tight race at the top right now. Decided to switch into a new category, a bit different from whatever. So the category is World Mammals. A drawing of it by John Hunter, naturalist and governor of New South Wales, published in 1802, labels it Ornithornis paradoxus. So, Max, you are trailing right now. So,
you said we're keeping it tight at the top, and I'm trying to keep it tight at the bottom. I wagered 100 because I've got nothing to lose. And I figured this guy was in Australia pretty early on in the history of Australia. So I was thinking between common mammals in Australia, and I was between my little koala bear friend that's on my desk and a kangaroo, which are literally everywhere in Australia, or maybe a drop bear. But I've never seen a drop bear. So I went with kangaroo.
What the fuck is a drop
bear?
Everywhere
in Australia. It's an inside joke in Australia if you go there. Say, have you seen a drop bear? And it's just kind of like,
oh, like
you Google it.
Left-handed fungo bat.
I just want it to be noted.
It's the Loch Ness Monster of Australia.
Gotcha.
He just talked about where he'd been in a way that I didn't earlier, and I got crap for not saying where I'd
been. I didn't say I've been there. I said that kangaroos are everywhere in Australia.
You just said if you're in Australia and someone says if you've seen a drop bear, which would indicate you've been there and had that people would say.
Well, we'll see if he got it right.
And I didn't get anything to do with bears in the name, but I don't know what is that, Latin? I don't know. I'm trying to maintain my spot at the bottom either way. So I figured if I got it wrong and said kangaroo, I didn't say kangaroo, I'd be pissed.
So that is Latin. I know that I was in second place going in. That is Latin, and ornithology is study of birds. And so my first thought was paradoxus, you know, it's weird, you know, weird bird. Oh, maybe this is like a dodo bird. But I ultimately settled on the fact that, you know, paradox is more than just weird. It's a very specific thing. And what bird is more paradoxical than the bird-faced thing that is not actually a bird, the platypus?
I also did the platypus because, ornithological and paradoxus. And again, coming back to, what other weird bird is also a mammal? It's the platypus. So hopefully we got that right.
Yes, platypus is the correct answer.
Huzzah.
A mammal that lays eggs, not very common in the world. So, but I think that the wagers give Sean a 1-point lead now. So.
Oh, hell yeah!
Sean wagered 75, and Pierce wagered
72?
So
why? What?
Well, the 2-point lead gave him the lead going to last week, but anyway.
I know.
I liked that I had the two, so if I lost points, I would have like a round zero number.
Okay.
Well, Max, if you just need to double up a few times, and you'll be right back in it.
Yeah, I don't know. These fuckers know Latin. What am I supposed to do?
this was the Australia question. I didn't know anything. I don't know any Latin. I saw Australia paradox. Platypus.
Oh, well.
I didn't know platypuses were from Australia.
That's like one of the few things from elementary school earth science, I feel like I remember. I think my teacher was just really into them, so, you know.
Yeah, if you never go to Australia, you just learn about the weird animals. If you actually go there, you'd be like, oh, these are nice people that have survived all these weird animals. You don't even think about them.
All right. That's the end of the show. You can find us at our home on the web at www.prettyokpod.com or on your podcast app of choice. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. Until then, I'm Sean.
I'm Pierce.
I'm Max.
I'm Kevin.
Hey, apparently we know Latin, Pierce. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Go public school. In a world without pain.